Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. My thoughts this week, of course, are with everybody affected by Sandy, up and down the Northeast and into Western New York, the Finger Lakes and Ohio. My thoughts are with you. I am calling in from North Carolina because I couldn't get back home in time to do the show. So, well, we have a show, and we're proceeding. I hope you were with me last week. Oh, it would hurt me deeply to learn that you had missed a conversation with Jana Eggers. She's a senior vice president of products and marketing for Blackbaud. At their BBCon conference last month, we talked about what's coming in the nonprofit technology market, special considerations for purchasing technology, and leadership lessons that she's learned from being a triathlete. Also, GPS, it was Global Positioning Scott. Scott Kegler is the editor of Nonprofit Technology News and our technology contributor. We talked about location-based services that use the GPS technology in your smartphone. Foursquare, Instagram, Yelp, and Facebook Places are examples of sites that you can learn from or partner with to get to know your donors and volunteers better. This week, Grow Your Grateful Patient Program. Bill McGinley, President and CEO of the Association for Healthcare Philanthropy, AHP, and Nancy Johnson, Senior Consultant at Target Analytics, sat with me at the BBCon conference to talk about healthcare grateful patient fundraising, why these prospects are critical and very generous, privacy concerns, and how to start your relationship. Also, disaster relief. Charities want to help Hurricane Sandy victims, but in the rush to help, you can't ignore the rules around private benefit, needs assessment, and documentation. You'll be on the right path with our legal contributors, Gene Takagi and Emily Chan, from the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group. Between the guests on Tony's Take Two, I have a bunch of Sandy disaster relief organizations that are doing very good work, and I'll share some of those. If you're on Twitter, you can be using the hashtag Nonprofit Radio to join the conversation with us. We take a break, and when we get back, we'll go right into Grow Your Grateful Patient program. Stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Join the Metaphysical Center of New Jersey and the Association for Higher Awareness for two exciting events this fall, live, just minutes from New York City in Pompton Plains, New Jersey. Dr. Judith Orloff will address her bestseller, Emotional Freedom, and Greg Braden will discuss his latest book, Deep Truth, Living on the Edge. Are you ready for 12-21-12? Save the dates. Judith Orloff, October 18th, and Greg Braden, November 9th and 10th. For early bird tickets, visit metaphysicalcenterofnewjersey.org or ahanj.net.
Hi, I'm Dana.
And I'm Don.
We are certified mediators. And I am a family and couples licensed therapist and author of Please Don't Buy Me Ice Cream.
Our show, New Beginnings, is about helping you and your family recover financially and emotionally and start the beginning of your life.
We'll answer your questions on divorce, family court, co-parenting, personal development, new relationships, blending families, and more.
Dana and I will bring you to a place of empowerment and belief that even though marriages may end, families are forever.
Join us every Monday starting September 10th at 10 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of BBCon 2012. We're in Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. My guests are Nancy Johnson. She's a senior consultant with Target Analytics, a Blackbaud company, and Bill McGinley, president and CEO of the Association for Healthcare Philanthropy. Both of you, Nancy, Bill, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking time on a busy day.
Delighted.
Fun day.
Your seminar topic is best practices for successful healthcare fundraising, how to strategically grow your grateful patient program. Bill, president and CEO of the Association for Healthcare Philanthropy. I like to get the articles right.
That got you thrown.
The details are important. Okay. I like the articles.
All right.
Why is a grateful patient program critical to healthcare fundraising?
Sure.
Let's start at the basics.
In healthcare, in our group particularly, as we're representing providers, hospitals, medical centers, long-term care, hospice, and such, the group that is connected, that has had an experience, that has been touched by the provider is a very important group. They're very generous. They are involved. They know what the organization is about and what it can provide. So they are more generous than the average member of the public, simply because they've had an experience with the institution and they know what it's like. They are a major part of the family, which is the physicians, the employees, the governance, the executive, the trustees of the hospital, and grateful patients. They represent over 55% of individuals that give to healthcare. So they're essential for us, and they're big givers.
Help me understand why they're not unapproachable because of privacy laws.
Well, they are very approachable, and the privacy laws allow the healthcare provider access to demographic information. So names, addresses of patients are part of what we do internally,
right,
for our fundraising.
Okay.
That is perfectly acceptable.
So it's acceptable for the clinician to share with the development office, is that right?
The physician at a hospital, the nurse, the janitor can refer a name to the foundation for somebody who might be interested to give.
Okay.
It's perfectly acceptable and permissible under the law.
And Nancy, why don't we start with some of the tips that you have for growing this very important grateful patient program. 55% of individual fundraising to healthcare is from these people. How do we get started?
Absolutely. Well, one of the main objectives is to be able to find the people that are in the hospital immediately so that the foundation can really approach them. Not approach them for a gift. I'm coming to say hello. I'm introducing you to the foundation and letting you know that our goal at the foundation is to increase the awareness of what we do to help raise more money. Mm-hmm. And so what we see is the opportunity to find the best people to make the right gift at the right time, and what we're doing is identifying the people that are most capable,
okay,
as well as the people that are already connected.
And how do we start that conversation, though? Once we've identified the people, how do we initiate the conversation?
While they're in the hospital, it's a quick hello. I want to connect with you. Now, if you're already a donor, I've been wanting to meet you. You've probably been wanting to meet me. We've maybe met at events. We're friends. So you would expect me to come by and say hello to you.
Oh, so these are people, we're starting with the premise that these are people who are already known to the hospital.
Oftentimes they are.
Okay.
Other times you're a new prospect, a new patient that's just came to the hospital. And what's important is to let them understand and know that we have a foundation that will be working with them for the future.
Okay. Bill, what do you hear from fundraising professionals in hospitals about making that initial contact?
Sure.
What kinds of responses are, I mean, are patients willing to talk?
Oh, very much so. And when our members are making these visits, they're rounding and they're in the room with a patient, one of the things they're offering to do is they are a contact for you. Anyone that comes into a hospital to have a procedure, that is very unique for the individual. It may be a bit routine for some of the providers. Our member, you know, really steps across that gap in providing for, as a resource, answering questions, someone they can turn to for communication to make sure that they're comfortable with what they're receiving and the kinds of things that they're going to undergo and experience while they're in the hospital. Because it is a foreign land to anybody who's a patient who's coming in
foreign,
for the first time.
Foreign, scary.
It can be, absolutely. Right? It's unknown. And while, again, it's very routine for the providers in the sense that they live there, they work there, it is a unique experience for any patient who's coming in.
And Nancy, I took you on a slight digression, how to make the contact once we've identified, but what's your advice around doing the identification of current patients?
Absolutely. We have a process that is totally automated, so no human hands touching the data.
Now, and we as the BlackBot.
We as BlackBot
product.
Target Analytics.
Target Analytics. Okay.
Many of our clients use Raiser's Edge as their donor management system, so many of their donors are already known, and we compare the names of the new admits to their database, as well as to a wealth program. And we're putting a rating, letting them know the best prospects for major gifts, the best prospects for annual giving, and that allows them then to make a decision if they should go visit.
Okay.
And or put them into an annual solicitation program.
All right. Did you want to add something, Bill?
Well, and even better yet, if we're visiting someone that we know that is a major gift donor, it is reestablishing that contact with them and maintaining their interest in the programs and their opportunity to support activities that are beneficial for others in their community.
This is an opportunity for the foundation to reach out to people with them in the hospital. So I look at it as they're coming to visit you. They're there. If you don't reach out and say hello to them after you've had a relationship for years, that's not really good. I want to say at least hello. It's not going to be a long visit.
Okay.
But I'm reaching out to you.
And what if it is someone who's new to the hospital, not part of the family, not someone you've known for years? Still appropriate to greet them while they're in the hospital?
Absolutely. I believe that most people, when they're in the hospital, they're experiencing something unique. It may be the first time they've known about the hospital. They become part of the healthcare family there. And by reaching out to them, they expect it's a hello. Here's a discount for the gift shop, or maybe I'm going to leave the newspaper behind for you. I come in with a friendly face. I'm not bringing in needles, and I'm not taking blood from you,
right.
And it's a quick hi.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Join the Metaphysical Center of New Jersey and the Association for Higher Awareness for two exciting events this fall, live, just minutes from New York City in Pompton Plains, New Jersey. Dr. Judith Orloff will address her bestseller, Emotional Freedom, and Greg Braden will discuss his latest book, Deep Truth, Living on the Edge. Are you ready for 12-21-12? Save the dates. Judith Orloff, October 18th, and Greg Braden, November 9th and 10th. For early bird tickets, visit metaphysicalcenterofnewjersey.org or ahanj.net.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
I found it interesting what Nancy said in the session earlier today was that these people are coming to your home. They're coming to the hospital, our home. They're coming into our facility. And there are, any experience you have in the hospital, there are 5, 10, 15 people that are in and out that are touching your life during that process. And to have one focal point that can be helpful that you know you can turn to if you've got questions, or a spot that you can go to, a person you can go to facilitate communication and make sure it's clear among all these services that are being provided, is very much appreciated by patients. That's what we find.
So you're encouraging the fundraiser to ask to act as a resource.
Yes,
for the
patient. Oftentimes they do, and it's quite appreciated, as we know.
All right, so then after we've identified, we've initiated contact, Bill, what's another strategy for growing this program?
Well, that's part of what we were talking about today. There are different levels of grateful patient programs.
Okay.
At the very basic level, you find that contact, that call being made, that introduction, and it may be 60 or 90 days later where we're looking at that individual and deciding, is this someone we want to make an appeal to or reach out to about some program or service that we're offering where their donation can help someone else? Is it someone who's contributed in the past or who has the capacity to do more? Do we want to put them, do we want to put an effort in front of them or an opportunity in front of them as a major donor where they can make a significant difference because of their contribution to the community? And, you know, that's very basic. There are others where you're doing the analysis and the analytics, if you will. You're assessing wealth management and capacity so that when you talk with someone, you develop a relationship, you clarify their interests, and also the level at which you believe they can support a particular activity in helping others.
Now, Nancy, you're going to have to forgive me because I'm going to ask Bill about what some advice for a hospital that may not have Razor's Edge. So
there are some.
I don't want you to walk away. I don't want you to leave the conversation. But I'm just thinking of our audience as small and mid-sized charities, and there might be smaller hospital that doesn't have Razor's Edge.
Identifying.
Oh, you want to do it? All right, then we'll turn to Bill also.
Okay.
No, good.
Identifying grateful patients, we often look, we compare to their database, no matter what it is. And so they don't have to be a Razor's Edge user. The idea is we're helping them identify grateful patients and look into the patients that are there so that they're contributing to their experience.
Okay.
So it's a step.
There would have to be a mechanism for sharing the information from clinicians.
It comes from admissions, typically.
Okay.
And then it's submitted, and no one really has to touch it. It's electronically done. We screen it, and then the results are back within 90 minutes, so that the foundation can decide, okay, who's the best person to go visit this person?
Okay. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, and our members are clearly using Razor's Edge as a tool. And one of the best advantages of this as a tool is simply that it expands our members' capability beyond. It may be able to multiply the impact one person can have to twice as much or three times as much because it is some of it's automated, but it's more instantaneous than operating off of written records. The comparisons that you're making relative to wealth management to an individual who's in the hospital or who has been discharged is instantaneous as opposed to trying to make all those connections in your head. So this tool really expands our members' capacity for getting to more donors this way, and that's invaluable.
Okay. Bill, do you have specific advice for smaller hospitals, healthcare facilities that whether they're using Razor's Edge or not? Is it an advantage to be a smaller, maybe community hospital?
Well, you know, it's so much like everything you've heard around the world. All fundraising is local, and it is individual in many respects. And again, Razor's Edge is a tool that enables that capacity. If you don't have Razor's Edge, there are some other alternatives and things you can do all the way back to when I started, when it was, index cards in a shoebox.
Okay.
But it's that kind of approach. So there are things in between. Certainly Razor's Edge is sophisticated, and really the value is really in expanding the capability. But there are other ways you can do that. Part of it is more manpower, which is hard to get in smaller organizations. Part of it is a process and dedication to that process every day, no matter what the elements are that you put in place. So you can make it work. It may not be quite as effective without some of these tools, but it's still going to work.
Okay, so the smaller community, what I'm familiar with, the smaller community hospital shouldn't avoid a grateful patient program.
No, not at all.
Absolutely not.
If you're a foundation executive, this fundraising is part of your obligation, your purpose, and it's within the healthcare community. These are institutionally related foundations to the hospital.
Right.
They're not out raising money for the, you know, the something else in the community.
It's sure,
focused
it's a foundation
on delivery.
Of the hospital. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And
go ahead, Nancy.
Tony, another area that we offer at Blackbaud, we want to be able to help all sizes of nonprofits. So we eTapestry is a wonderful solution that is many times used for the smaller community hospitals.
eTapestry, is that a cloud-based?
Is it?
Yes,
it
yeah.
is.
Okay.
And so don't think we know, history tells us, we've worked together many, many years, that many of the hospitals use Razor's Edge. But like you say, some of the smaller, newer hospitals, maybe they don't need the sophistication, and they have we have a wonderful opportunity for them to use eTapestry.
Okay. Sure. Let's talk about some other advice around building, go back to building this Grateful Patient program. Nancy, what further advice did you give in your seminar we haven't talked about?
Well, each hospital is unique, and when they start looking at what makes the program different, it's getting buy-in from the whole healthcare community, from the top all the way to the janitor that's in the room with someone. The foundation needs to be more than the organization, the part of the organization that says, hey, do you want to be, how much are you going to give to the employee program this year? We want to make sure that the foundation is connecting with the nurses, the people that are front line with the patients, and making sure that we're hearing, hey, you need to stop in and have a visit. We need to make sure that we're introducing Grateful Patient programs that can enhance all the different areas of the hospital so that everyone's understanding those programs.
Yeah.
And bringing the community together, because really it's all about the services that we're providing to these healthcare.
What's your advice about getting the clinicians involved in fundraising? First, they're busy. What I hear and my experience in doing some planned giving consulting for hospitals is docs are typically, well, I don't know, typically. A good number of doctors are not willing to partner really with the fundraising, with the development office or the foundation. What's your advice for sort of breaking down those walls?
I think when you really start involving the whole team and you have a new approach, and it may be a totally new approach, you have to think outside of what you have done in the past. Healthcare is, we're having to raise more dollars every year. And when you're asked to raise more dollars with less, yeah, you've got to use right technology.
What's a new approach? Help the audience understand. What's one new approach that they can go to their doctors with?
By implementing this information so that I can focus within 90 minutes and be able to be next to someone and introducing all the good work we do.
Okay.
That makes, it takes the guesswork out. It allows me to be more focused. And then it also allows the doctors to have the opportunity to refer people to us and a system in place so that they know as a team we're working together.
Bill, do you have advice for breaking down those walls, getting to those doctors who are often unwilling?
And it's not just the doctors. You're talking about building a culture of philanthropy and awareness
throughout the community.
Okay?
Right, as Nancy was saying.
You do that with the orientation with new and ongoing employees that you have. You do that in the training opportunities with the nurses and with the practitioners and such, that you're talking about philanthropy. You're letting them know about the foundation. With the physicians, they're human beings too. You need to embrace them the way you do others. And there are programs and activities that can be very supportive of areas that they are interested in, either in their specialty or in pieces of equipment or things that are going to make their delivery of care much higher to their patients. So sometimes it has to be very specific for them.
Helping them see what the foundation can do for them if they're willing to partner.
And I mentioned that family of donors, the physicians are a large portion of that.
Right.
It's not every physician, though, but it's the ones that turn on to see the fact that, hey, getting involved this way and even being philanthropic myself, which if I do it through planned giving or some other vehicles can benefit me indirectly, that has a meaningful impact on my patients. And that's where doctors focus. It's all about them and their patients, it seems to me.
So if we can bring it down to the patient care level,
right,
the benefits of working with the foundation, making those clear. Go ahead.
And one other element that struck me is that in that culture of philanthropy, what you want to get it to is a point in the overall institution that this isn't something that's nice to have. This is something that's essential that needs to be elevated to the strategic level of the planning of the whole hospital so that the executives on the hospital side are learning to plan for and depend upon and demand that philanthropy be a major part of their business and what they're trying to do for the community.
It has to come from leadership, right?
I mean,
creating this culture.
And we see in our benchmarking service that we do with the standards where you have the CEO of the hospital involved in an active way in signing letters, in being present, and making some of the calls with you as appropriate, you're getting a much better result and a much better return on the dollars that are being raised because donors want to know that they're having an impact and the important people in this business are aware of what they're doing.
And Bill, I think we've seen that change over the years. The two of us sitting in these seats have watched healthcare philanthropy change enormously.
Excellent. We have to leave it there. I want to thank Nancy Johnson, Senior Consultant with Target Analytics, and Bill McGinley, President and CEO of the Association for Healthcare Philanthropy. Thanks very much for being guests.
Thank you.
Very good.
It's been a pleasure.
But
thank
I'm
you.
Not done.
You are. You don't know.
I'm
you
done.
Are. Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of BBCon 2012. We'll be back with additional guests, and you'll hear further segments. Stay with us.
My thanks to Nancy Johnson and Bill McGinley and all the people at BBCon. It was a pleasure to be there, and I have more interviews from BBCon 2012 coming for you. Right now we take a break. When we return, it's Tony's Take Two, and then Gene and Emily, Disaster Relief. Stay with me.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Are you fed up with talking points rhetoric? Every way you turn, it's left or right spin, ideology, no reality. In fact, it's ideology over intellect. No more. It's time for the truth. Join me, Larry Sharp, a.k.a. The Neosage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern, for the Ivory Tower radio program. In the Ivory Tower, we'll discuss what's important to you, society, politics, business, and family. It's provocative talk for the realist and the skeptic who want to know what's really going on, what does it mean, and what can be done about it. So gain special access to the Ivory Tower and listen to me, Larry Sharp, your Neosage, Tuesday nights, 9 to 11 New York time. Go to ivorytowerradio.com for details. That's ivorytowerradio.com. The Ivory Tower is a great place to visit for both entertainment and education. Listen in Tuesday nights, 9 to 11. It will make you smarter.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Lively conversation, top trends, and sound advice. That's Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio. And I'm Jana Eggers, Senior Vice President, Products and Marketing from Blackpod.
Time now for Tony's Take Two. I have a lot of ways that you can help Hurricane Sandy victims throughout the country, because of course it was not only the Northeast and not only New York that was hurt, but the hurricane then, from New York City went into Western New York and upstate into the Finger Lakes region and then into Ohio. So nationally, there's the American Red Cross. You can donate at redcross.org, or you can text Red Cross to 90999, and you'll be giving $10 to their disaster relief fund, including Sandy. Red Cross is also looking for volunteers. So if you're able to volunteer, redcross.org is the place. Feeding America, they have a lot of food and emergency supplies, water, that they're giving throughout the disaster zone. And to donate to them, go to feedingamerica.org. Save the Children is also working to provide relief to families and their children. They are at savethechildren.org. Craig Newmark, who has been a guest on the show twice, he's the founder of Craigslist and Craig Connects, and he's matching donations up to $25,000 for Sandy victims, and he's doing that through CrowdRise. So to give to that fund, you go to crowdrise.com/Sandy Relief. And when you go there, a picture of Craig pops up. If you want to be more local in New York, there are a lot of blood drives. I read hundreds of blood drives that were canceled because of the hurricane throughout New York State. So now we need blood. And if you want to donate blood in the New York City area, it's nybloodcenter.org. If you happen to be a techie in New York, if you have tech skills, New York Tech Meetup and New Work City are organizing volunteers that have technology skills to help with relief efforts, to help New York area businesses and nonprofits get their technology back up and running. And for that, you can go to bit.ly/hurricane-tech-volunteers. So that's a bunch of places that you can give time or money to in support of people that are really in need throughout the Northeast and up into, as I said, northern New York State and Ohio. And on my blog this week is a post called Researcher Bias in Stelter's Planned Giving Study. The Stelter company did a survey of potential planned giving donors, at least people they believe are potential planned giving donors. But I detail in my blog that the Stelter company also makes its money in large part by selling print materials, direct mail materials, websites, and consulting services for outreach. So to me, it's in their broad corporate interest to have a bigger base of planned giving prospects than we traditionally have had. And that, to me, creates a conflict. They want to sell their services, and they're encouraging charities to look beyond the what's been the traditional prospect pools in terms of age and loyalty, giving history. And so I detail that on the blog. Again, the post is called Researcher Bias in Stelter's Planned Giving Survey. And my blog is at tonymartinetti.com. That is Tony's Take Two for Friday, November 2, 46th show of the year. With me now are Gene and Emily. Gene and Emily, are you there?
Hi, Tony. This is Gene. Emily's beside me, but it's going to be me alone today. And we hope that you and your family and all your loved ones are doing well. Our thoughts and prayers for everybody affected by the hurricane.
Thank you very much, Gene. I know you're familiar with natural disasters in being in the San Francisco area.
Yeah, we certainly do.
Emily is there. She's just holding your hand, or what? She's not going to.
Yeah, she pretty much is holding my hand and prompting to tell me what to say.
Okay. Of course, Gene Takagi and Emily Chan, their firm is the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group, NEO, which you'll find at attorneyfornonprofits.com. And Gene's blog is, Gene, I don't have it in front of me because I'm remote right now, remind people what your blog is, please.
Sure, it's just the Nonprofit Law Blog.
Nonprofitlawblog.com, and Emily is a contributor to that as well. So we're talking about disaster relief, obviously timely. If a charity wants to do something, they're so moved, maybe they're in a neighborhood that's affected, or whether they are or not, can they just start a Sandy Disaster Relief Fund?
Well, it's a great question, Tony. And, you know, charities are often the centers of their communities, especially in small communities. And it's really great to see communities pull together and nonprofits wanting to help. But sometimes the nonprofit's mission is not aligned or consistent with providing disaster relief. They might be in existence for doing some other types of services. But that doesn't mean that they can't help. But it does mean that they may have to take some steps before they help. And one of the things that they need to do is they need to change their mission. So they've got to make sure that on their website, on their marketing materials, and particularly if they've got a mission statement in their articles of incorporation or their bylaws, to change that, to expand it, to being able to provide those disaster relief services that they want to provide.
Oh, for Pete's sake, so if I want to do something, I can't just do it the next morning? I have to look at my articles of incorporation first?
Yeah, you've got to get that board together and take an emergency action to expand that mission statement to the extent that it is constrained by your articles. And so you've got to operate consistent with your governing documents. So you've got to change those if there is that statement in there. That's one of the reasons why we like to make sure that the article's purpose statement, it's called a certificate of incorporation in New York, is not so specific that you can't let your organization evolve to take on things like this in the future. And a tip for revisiting your mission statement for all nonprofits.
So is there a phrase that is safe, that is broad enough that you recommend, so that it doesn't have to say hurricane relief, right?
Absolutely. So you can say we are providing charitable services in whatever areas you want to focus on, and leave it as broadly as that in your articles. And then you can define it more specifically on your website and on marketing materials like grant applications. But when you decide to engage in a new activity like disaster relief, and that really goes outside of what you're doing, perhaps you were providing music education, you know, when you really go outside of that bounds, you've got to make sure that you don't use prior donors' funds, which were dedicated towards music education in our example, but you're using new funds once you've changed your mission statement to engage in that disaster relief activity.
Okay. And, of course, once you start collecting funds for a certain purpose, then you have to use them for that purpose.
That's correct.
You can't then, if the disaster is overcome, you can't switch your funds back to music.
Right. So the monies that you raise for disaster relief, you've got to make sure that they're focused on that.
Right.
And we had some issues with that after 9/11 and some other disasters where organizations felt that they had expended enough money in that area and wanted to divert the rest of the money into other areas, and that can be a real danger.
Right. Is Emily passing you notes right now?
Yeah, she always passes me notes.
She is passing you notes. Okay. Stop it, Emily. Gene's good on his own. He knows what he's doing. Okay, so once you then expand the mission statement, if you need to, you also have to inform the IRS. Is that right?
Yeah, although you don't have to do that right away. So you can engage in the disaster relief activities, which usually you've got to do pretty quickly. But you can report the change in your activities and the change in your mission to the IRS when you file the Form 990 for the year in which you changed those activities. So, for example, you wouldn't have to file if you were going, you know, filing for 2012 until May 2013.
Okay, that doesn't have to be immediate. I just realized I neglected to send live listener love during Tony's Take Two, and we have a lot of listeners abroad, Tokyo, Taipei in Taiwan, and Yongin, Korea, and Shenzhen, China. Welcome. Live listener love to all those foreign countries, and also to Philadelphia, which is not quite as foreign to me. I live in New York, but Philadelphia is not quite as foreign as those other cities. Pardon me for that, Gene, but I have to send live listener love, sorry.
That's great.
All right, so once you have expanded your mission statement, if necessary, Then is there any limit to what kinds of relief you can provide?
Well, there are. So you're still restricted by what we described on our last couple shows as private benefit issues.
Private benefit again?
Yeah, so, you know, charities exist to provide a public benefit, and they can't be operated to promote private interests. So you got to be careful. So we can't give $1 million away to somebody who was barely hurt by the hurricane. That would not be appropriate. We've also got to be worried about conflicts of interest. So for giving to board members or to officers of the organization and not in an objective manner, not as part of a charitable class of individuals as affected, or with preferential treatment to those insiders, that would be wrong. But we certainly can provide funds, services, or goods to ensure that victims have basic necessities like food and clothing and housing and medical assistance and things like that.
Now, can you define a class of people that you want to help?
Yeah, I mean, that's something you should do. So you should say, you know, this is good for business and not only legal reasons, but are we just going to help anybody affected by the hurricane? Are we going to, you know, really look at financial need? Are we going to not look at financial need? And we don't have to. We learned after 9/11 that we can even help communities that don't have financial disadvantages but that were hurt badly by the hurricane and or any disaster, and we can give emergency relief. So emergency relief services can be given without a needs assessment. Otherwise, we want to determine what type of needs we're looking for. Is it financial need? Is it medical need? Is it, you know, for disabled individuals within a given area? Are we going to limit it geographically? All sorts of things that we need to target our mission towards. And then when we get this whole pool of charitable class members that want our attention, we have to figure out what type of resources we have and how we decide who to give it to.
The needs assessment is something that's required, or it's just very smart to do?
Well, it's really required if you're going to
require
ongoing assistance. Yeah, it's not so required if you're just providing emergency assistance. So for giving out blankets and foods and shelter in the next couple weeks for the hurricane victims, there's no needs assessment required for that. You know, it's pretty obvious who's in need.
Okay.
But if we're going to be giving ongoing, you know, rental assistance payments, and that's going to last for several you know, months past the hurricane, then we're going to have to think about why are we just giving it to a select few individuals and how did we choose them? We've got to have some objective and good faith criteria there.
Hmm. What about helping businesses? We've been talking about people.
Yeah, that's actually possible, and some people, you know, don't realize that that's possible, but sometimes business owners are financially needy, and that would be okay to provide businesses in that case, and otherwise they might be distressed or to combat community deterioration or lessen the burdens of government, and we've seen, you know, from the West Coast, we've seen the photos of some of the impact of the hurricane on the seaboard especially, and those are communities where, you know, they're not going to recover unless their businesses recover. They're small businesses, and the small business owners need assistance to get back in there. Otherwise, the community is not going to get back. And so that's a case where nonprofits can actually provide assistance to businesses as well.
Okay. But and going back to people, we can't define a class of people that's illegal in or, you know, impermissible in other circumstances just because we happen to know that they were particularly burdened by whatever the disaster is.
Well, I mean, you can certainly define your class how you want it, but it's got to be, again, pretty objective so that you're not, you know, favoring people who either don't really have a need or favoring insiders of the charity over others.
Okay. We can't target this to specific individuals, but we can certainly say communities, though, right?
Yeah, and it could be a small neighborhood community that you're targeting that was especially impacted, or where the charity is in existence and is kind of the hub of that community, or we can have more expansive criteria.
Okay. And now, so the people need to fit into the people that you're helping need to fit into that charitable class, as you said. Say a little more about potential conflicts of interest.
Sure. Well, you know, if you've got a board of directors of a charity, as charities should have, and they're determining who's going to get aid from the charity, We certainly don't want them to benefit themselves, though there are others, even if they've been affected by the disaster. They might be able to be eligible to be considered among the charitable class of individuals, and so they might get some benefit, but it would be incidental, and they should certainly not be making decisions on benefiting themselves. They would have to abstain if they're part of that charitable class on who to pick that will receive help. I mean, it would be nice if charities can give help to everybody, but obviously resources are limited, and so they've got to decide who is most impacted or who they want to help the most in line with their mission. And board members and officers of the organization have to really be careful because they're in power positions of making those types of decisions.
All right.
So that's the conflict of interest issue. And sometimes when you have outsiders who are part of the selection committee, that can create more trust if you get community leaders who are not on the board but involved in selecting who might be able to receive relief. That might give some, assurance to the community that they're not going to only benefit themselves, the board of the charity, that is. But it also creates additional conflicts of interest so that we make sure that those people aren't benefiting themselves, the outside selection committee members, or their families, or their business partners, or business relations. So we just have to be careful about those things.
I see. And that's consistent with what we've talked about in the past.
That's absolutely right.
We have just a minute before a break, Gene. Would it be permissible for a charity to say that the charitable class they want to help is volunteers to that charity, people who have been volunteering with them in the past?
Yeah, as long as that's a significantly large enough and indefinite class of individuals, it's going to be okay. So if we've got, 100 volunteers and we're open to taking more volunteers and we're going to help our volunteers, that's going to be okay, especially if they're not preferentially board members and officers of the organizations who are volunteers.
Okay.
But if it's too small a class, if it's like 5 people who are volunteers, we can't serve, just those 5 people as our charitable class. That would be an impermissible private benefit.
All right. We're going to take a break. Gene Takagi stays with us. We'll keep talking about disaster relief, and I hope you do too.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, this is Nancy Tatro from Speak Spin Radio. Speak Spin Radio is an exploration of the world of communication, how it happens and how to make it better, because the quality of your communication has a direct impact on the quality of your life. Tune in Mondays at 2 p.m. on TalkingAlternative.com, where I'll be interviewing experts from business, academia, the arts, and new thought. Join me Mondays at 2 p.m. and get all your communications questions answered on Speak Spin Radio.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
How's your game? Want to improve your performance, focus, and motivation? Then you need Aspire Athletic Consulting. Stop second-guessing yourself. Move your game to the next level. Bring back the fun of the sport. Help your child build confidence and self-esteem through sports. Contact Dale at Aspire Athletic Consulting for a free 15-minute power session to get unstuck today. Your greatest athletic performance is just a phone call away at 801-604-0294 or visit aspireconsulting.vpweb. Motivational coaching for athletic excellence. Aspire to greatness.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
We got more live listener love to Salt Lake City and Moscow and Dallas, Texas. Also, South Bend, Indiana. Thanks for joining us. Live listener love to all those cities. Gene, what if you collect more money than there is need? Now you've said you're specifically collecting it for this purpose. It's not needed anymore. What do you do?
Yeah, that's really tricky, Tony. So one of the things is try to avoid that situation. So you want to be careful when you redefine your mission. The only way that happens is usually when you've defined your charitable class so small that, you know, you've raised enough money to help them out through their emergencies, and you've decided you've got extra money left. At that point, you've got to operate as close as you can to the charitable purpose for which those monies were collected. Donors typically don't have a right to get that money back. So, you know, you could go to court and figure out what to do with that extra money, and people could bring you into court to decide what to do with that. That happened with 9/11. Don't want that to happen. So be very careful of that. You can usually find your way around it as long as you haven't made your mission and your charitable class so tiny and specific that it becomes an issue later.
Okay. But what do you do with the money?
Well, you're going to use it for as close to that mission as possible, and if it's really outside of that, then you're going to have to go to court and get them to follow through and approve where that money's going to go, and it's called a CyPRE issue, but I didn't want to get into jargon jail, but I suppose I just have.
CyPRE. I like how that's spelled. CyPRES, isn't it?
That's correct.
CyPRE. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead. Tell us what CyPRE is, show off.
Well, CyPRE is, of course, Latin, and lawyers like to use it to impress other people. And what it literally means...
You mean like you're doing right now, Gene?
I think it is as near as possible, or as near as may be possible. And, well, I think it's Latin. It may also actually be French, or coming from the old French language. So... It's often used where people have designated their gifts, their charitable gifts, to certain purposes, and that purpose is no longer required or becomes impossible to fulfill. And so that might be, for example, the eradication of polio, which the March of Dimes had encountered early on, and they needed to change their mission later. They decided to, otherwise polio had you know, essentially been eradicated with Jonas Salk's vaccine, and they changed to birth defects. So CyPRE is a very common doctrine used when charitable purposes have been completed or are impossible to complete further.
All right. That sounds like a lot of trouble. Could we give the money that's excess to another charity that does the type of work that we had raised the money for?
Yeah, certainly. If they can do those type of activities and we no longer can't, then that certainly is permissible, so long as donor's intent and what the charity had said the money would be used for is still used for those purposes.
Yeah, okay. So there's an easier way out than going to court. All right.
Right, so long as, again, you didn't pick such a fine mission that nobody else can do it either.
Yeah, all right. We have just about 2 minutes before we have to go. Let's say a little more about documentation. We talked about the Articles of Incorporation, amending those, and we talked about the 990 in that year. What else is required?
Well, you know, what you should be requiring is the type of assistance that you provided, whether it be financial assistance or in-kind goods, blankets, food, housing, whatever, the costs associated to the charity with providing that assistance, the purpose of why you're giving that assistance and why you're giving it to those individuals that are receiving the assistance over others. If the board was not making those determinations about who gets and who doesn't get, and it was some selection committee, how did you choose that selection committee, and what criteria did they use for disbursing the aid? You want to also document the names and the addresses of the recipients of the financial aid that you've given or significant non-financial aid given. Again, this wouldn't be necessary for emergency relief where you're just giving food and shelter and blankets and things. But if it's ongoing aid, you want to make sure you know who those recipients are. And you want to disclose that either there was no relationship between the recipients of AIDS and an insider, a director, officer, or a substantial contributor to the organization.
All right.
And
30 seconds.
Document that. Oh. I do have one last thing, Tony. Make sure donors don't earmark their donations towards specific individuals. That's not allowed. So I can't give a gift and say, give it to my uncle who got affected by the hurricane. That would be not allowed.
15 seconds, where do we document all this? Is it just in board minutes?
Yeah, you can document it in board minutes or any sort of organizational document that you hold and that the organization can attest is the policy or the practice of the organization.
Gene Takagi, his firm is Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group in San Francisco, and you'll find him at Nonprofit Law Blog. Thank you very much, Gene.
Thanks, Tony.
My thanks also to Regina Walton, a live listener love going to her in San Francisco, and she also very helpful in compiling the list of agencies that I had for Tony's Take Two. Regina, thank you very much. I have a new Fundraising Fundamentals podcast out with the Chronicle of Philanthropy. It is how to recruit and motivate volunteers for your events. You'll find it on the Chronicle website, and you'll also find Fundraising Fundamentals on iTunes. Next week, career advice for your entry-level and junior employees. Jonathan Lewis produces career advice videos with leaders in nonprofit social change. His video interviews are free, and they're short, and I think they're valuable as you lead and mentor 20-somethings who want to make a difference in the world. He and I are going to listen to, and he'll comment on a couple of clips. One is called Mentoring for Dummies, and another one is called Shut the Hell Up. And also next week, Maria Semple returns. Our prospect research contributor and the prospect finder has resources for researching privately held companies. You know she always has a ton of free and low-cost sites and ideas, and next week will be no exception. You can find us on LinkedIn. We have a LinkedIn group. You can offer ideas for the shows and continue the conversation with guests on LinkedIn. We're on Facebook. You know that. I haven't said it recently, but that's because you already know it. You can listen to Nonprofit Radio live or archive. The archive is on iTunes at nonprofitradio.net. On Twitter, you can follow me. Use the show's hashtag, Nonprofit Radio. And you can also follow me on Foursquare. We can connect there. Wishing you good luck the way performers do around the world. We have left Estonia. Estonia is behind us. So from Estonia, go west across the Baltic Sea, and you land in Sweden, where they lightly kick performers in the butt before they go on stage. No hands allowed, only a kick, please. And when they're doing it, they will say, Brit et ben. Brit et ben, which means break a bone. So I guess Swedes don't have femurs and tibias and fibias, so just break any bone in your body is fine. It doesn't have to be specific to the leg. So I'm wishing you, Brit et ben. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is our line producer. Assistant producer, Janice Taylor, sending me texts and telling me when time is coming up. Thank you very much, Janice. Show's social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. Oh, I hope you'll be with me next week, Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, on Talking Alternative Broadcasting at talkingalternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hi, this is Nancy Tatro from Speak Spin Radio. Speak Spin Radio is an exploration of the world of communication, how it happens and how to make it better, because the quality of your communication has a direct impact on the quality of your life. Tune in Mondays at 2 p.m. on TalkingAlternative.com, where I'll be interviewing experts from business, academia, the arts, and new thought. Join me Mondays at 2 p.m. and get all your communications questions answered on Speak Spin Radio.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Are you concerned about the future of your business or career? Would you like it all to just be better? Well, the way to do that is through better communication. And the best way to do that is training from the team at Improving Communications. This is Larry Sharp, host of the Ivory Tower Radio program and director at Improving Communications. Does your office need better leadership, customer service, sales, or maybe better writing or speaking skills? Could they be better at dealing with confrontation, conflicts, and touchy subjects? All are covered here at Improving Communications. If you're in the New York City area, stop by one of our public classes or get your human resources in touch with us. The website is improvingcommunications.com. That's improvingcommunications.com. Improve your professional environment. Be more effective. Be happier and make more money. Improving Communications. That's the answer.
TalkingAlternative.com.